Day, June 14th, 2007, open a public hearing on House Bill 2876A relating to energy problems. Ms. Dyson.
Good morning. House Bill 2876A was referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means from the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. That was the last policy committee through which it went, by a vote of 3-1. Basically, it requires that a state agency that's authorized to finance construction, purchase, or renovation of structures used by the state to reduce the amount of energy usage by 20% by June 30th, 2015. There are some contracting provisions working with the Department of Energy to help accomplish that goal and identify contractors who can help them achieve that particular goal, reporting requirements with the Department of Energy as well.
I have a representative witness here, by the way, who would like to testify on the bill.
We will go to public testimony, and I will start off with Representative Witt, if you'd like to come forward. And the intent this morning is we'll try to give everybody about 3 to 4 minutes. Representative, you can take a little bit longer, but I'm trying to get all your House members onto the floor by about 9:05.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I will attempt to be as brief as is possible. I realize that you have a great deal of business to do here this morning. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2876, and I want to thank the committee and yourself for hearing the bill. Very briefly, the bill is an attempt to save energy in buildings which the state either owns or leases, and to realize a 20% savings by the year 2015 over levels of energy that were used in the same buildings in the year 2000. The intent is to save energy in general and to reduce the state's carbon footprint, reduce carbon emissions, and help set the standards as a state agency. Excuse me here, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for that. And to help do our part in eliminating or reducing the trend towards global warming. And last, but certainly not least, to reduce our dependence on foreign energy sources. The bill does all of these things through the use of energy audits, energy management and control measures, capital improvements, operations and management procedures, and energy savings performance contracts, the latter being a very unique approach here in that the performance contracts state that when one of the professional agencies comes in, be they engineers, licensed architects, or other qualified persons to be doing these kinds of energy audits, that a contract is prepared and the energy savings that the engineers prepare for will pay for the entire cost of that audit program. It does all these things using such a reasonable and cost-effective measures as conservation and alternative energy systems. And it should be noted, Mr. Chairman, that conservation is one of the most readily achievable means of saving energy that's available to us. With that, I would urge your favorable action on this bill.
Thank you very much, Representative. Questions? Thank you very much for coming this morning.
Thank you very much.
What we'll do is go through the parties here, probably in groups of 2 and 3. Mr. Endicott and Mr. Shipwreck. Mr. Shipwreck, your son-in-law is lobbying me about 3 times a day.
I don't have to tell you.
Yes, good.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bob Shiprack, Executive Secretary of the Oregon Building and Construction Trades Council. I'm here this morning, be very brief, to lend my strong support to this bill. Over the last few years in my position, I've become increasingly aware of the expertise that our contractors and journeymen and apprentices have gained in this area of saving energy, doing smart buildings, things like that. I'm kind of surprised that this bill hasn't been heralded a little bit more this session because we're doing so much on the energy front. The other thing, the other comments I'd like to make is, you know, we often talk about, you know, running government like a business, and I think this really goes to that. This is just smart business to get the energy efficiencies. You can recapture these costs within 4 or 5 years. And the last thing I'll just mention, and this was brought to my attention, that actually after about 5 years, there will be a net increase in the state's general fund as these energy costs are captured. And so you've got a bill that, one, puts people to work, does the right thing, saving energy, and at the end of the day, adds to the state's general fund. So I've brought with me an actual expert on this stuff. Mr. Endicott is with the Plumbers and Pipefitters Union and has spent a career in this very field. And if you have technical questions, he can answer them. And he also wants to make a few comments as well. Thank you.
Mr. Endicott, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Senator. John Endicott, I'm the business manager of Plumbers and Pipefitters Local Union 290. I represent over 4,000 plumbers and pipefitters in the state of Oregon and over 250 mechanical and plumbing contractors. And thank you for the opportunity today. In my career as a 35-year steam fitter, the majority of that career has been spent in the control industry. And, in fact, the company I work for did the controls in this building. And we, for years, have done energy audits as a company to provide payback to owners on upgrading their facilities with controls, energy-efficient units, pumps, variable-speed drive fans. And it's just a no-brainer. It makes an awful lot of sense. And as the cost of energy and the kilowatt-hours go up dramatically, those paybacks come back rapidly. And our members are well-trained and ready to go and have performed an awful lot of this work around the state of Oregon, and I'm real excited to see the state stepping forward. And like Bob said, it's a three-way win, and we're real excited and would encourage this bill to go forward.
Any questions?
Yeah,
yes, Senator Nelson.
Do you have some sort of range of, say, 10% or 20%, say, that you for every $100 of energy that you're using now, if you go through one of these processes, is there something?
It really depends on the building and the system that the building has and the age of the system. You know, older systems require, as the pipes get dirtier and clogged on the inside like an artery, it takes a lot more horsepower for the pump to pump the chilled water, heating water through there. So each building has its own variable. But an energy audit will research whether it's windows that need to be done, insulation on the piping that needs to be done, high SEER rating, energy efficient rating units on the roof, and control systems that monitor the proper air coming in and out of buildings. And another we found in doing these energy audits is as prices go up, some facilities have simply gone out and screwed shut the outside air dampers to save from heating that outside air that comes in. Now you've really got a problem with indoor air quality because you're just simply recirculating. So a lot of those factors are taken into place. But really, that's what you need the audit for because each building is its own unique.
Just to follow up, I mean, the fiscal analysis says $400,000, $438,000, just by $600,000. I would think that probably could recover that cost pretty fast from just from agency people. And then you got construction costs.
In my past career, that's what we would present to building owners after we did their audit. It would an example, we could put in $300,000 worth of control systems and other variables and show with energy rates and projected energy rates that there would be a savings in 3 to 4 to 5 years, and which would simply, those savings would pay off the cost of that insulation. After that, the building owner would be putting those savings in their back pocket. So we were pretty successful with that.
What would you suggest in terms of, obviously they're the long-term savings which would help address this, but our largest, literally our largest property owner in terms of agencies is the Oregon University System, with a lot of older buildings. Sometimes energy audits will come up with issues that need to be addressed that actually have underlying costs that are upfront costs. I know that there are some options in terms of potentially in terms of business energy tax credits and a few other things, but sometimes it's kind of an almost an insurmountable task.
Senator, there's a, I guess a real good example would be Oregon State University.
It is.
It's in a horrible disrepair. That university has a central steam plant, and through tunnels provides steam piping to the buildings to heat them. There's more steam leaking out into the steam tunnels than there are going into the buildings. I heard last year when that campus, when the outdoor air temperature gets a little bit below 30 degrees, they have a hard time maintaining the heat in their buildings. If you go down there on a frosty day, you can tell where all the steam tunnels are because they're nice and wet all the way through the campus. They're also talking about, and have for a few years, of putting a small cogeneration turbine on site, which would provide the heat and also electricity for the campus. I think that's been scaled back from its original scope, but that's another wonderful idea. It would be a perfect application for that type of energy saving.
We did in the last session actually approve some fairly major, not really an upgrade, the replacement to that system, although I think it takes a while to actually get things done.
If they have selected a contractor, we should be starting that project soon. I just remind the chair that the energy savings are so great on that project that the revenue bonds that were issued, about $60 million worth, will be repaid just on the savings in energy costs.
Yeah.
So you can fund these things just through the energy savings.
And Mr. Endicott, I remember the explanation during the last hearing is that it was something incredible, like any time that you got close to freezing, they were at the potential of the system failing and having to close the campus.
Right.
Literally. And if you can imagine closing a campus with about 19,000 students. Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is really based on my particular district, which has a great benefit with geothermal heat. When you mentioned steam at Oregon State, in Klamath Falls there is enough hot water coming up that the steam creates the heat in past years. Now when we built a new courthouse and administration building, we discovered that it's simply we can control the temperature in the building by the mixture of hot water and cold water coming in together. Oregon Institute of Technology will, within the next 24 months, be completely self-sustaining on its heat and electricity off of geothermal possibilities. So I'm just wondering, is that... I suspect if you don't have geothermal heat, you can't do an energy saving by mixing hot water and cold water to a degree.
Chair to Representative Girard, in your area, years, 30 years ago, one of your buildings was heated by geothermal. It was a great idea. The problem is the acidity of the water from that comes from underground. They every year had to replace all the tubes in the boiler because they would corroded. And replace the piping system. That was old technology. I think with better technology and better materials, that's an option again. And so they tried it years ago, but it wasn't cost effective for the free energy you were getting. You were spending more in replacing all the components. But I think geothermal is a resource that really needs to be looked at and tapped, especially in your area. There's a lot of free heat in the ground, and it's really kind of been shied away from, and why I'm not sure. Maybe the expense of making the first step, but it has been done in your area.
We, of course, even melt the snow off our sidewalks by laying heat strips underneath the sidewalk, allowing the hot water to flow, in essence, and it keeps all of our sidewalks and streets in the wintertime snow-free. So there are a great many applications, and as you probably are aware, they've now found that they can create energy, electricity, from the hot water. So that opens up another whole tremendous area of exploration, so to speak. So it's a very exciting field right now, renewable energies and et cetera.
Anything additional? Seeing none. Thank you both very much for coming.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Mr. Graney, or maybe I'll wait on Mr. Graney to be last because there may be some questions. Mr. Kafori and Mr. Bissonnette.
Morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Stephen Kafori. I'm here today representing Johnson Controls. Johnson is the 85th biggest company in the country, and the part of the company that I work for is the energy conservation section. And we do the energy savings performance contracts that are mentioned in this bill. I want to mention a couple of things. First of all, that this bill is brought to you by a consortium that includes the Department of Energy, Governor Energy Office, Fair and Clean Energy Coalition, AFL-CIO, Johnson Controls, Osberg. There are a lot of people from various backgrounds who got together to put this bill together. I'll bring to you, and it's really an exciting issue. I think when this session is done, people are going to look back on the 2007 session and name it the energy session because of all the energy things that we have done and are in the process of doing, and I think this is a very important part of that. My company does energy savings performance contracts, and I wanted to answer Senator Nelson's question and about how much energy can be saved on average on these projects. As was said earlier, it varies enormously according to the project, but often the older the building, the more energy savings that are available. We aim for about a 20% as an overall 20% savings. But the difference what we do, our company and other companies who perform energy savings performance contracts, more than just a company coming in and doing some energy conservation work, is that we actually guarantee this work. And we guarantee over the lifetime of the contract that the energy saved will pay for the energy cost. That includes the audits, that includes the engineering, includes the design, includes all the materials, the labor, and the financing costs. So there is no cost at all to the agency that's hiring us. And we guarantee this for the life of the contract, so that if in any year there's a problem, the equipment's not working right, the savings are not there, we come in for free and repair it and replace the equipment to make sure that it happens. We also are interested in doing the question about what happens if you get into a building and find out there's more things there than you thought. One of the advantages of doing a large contract where you take, for example, the whole campus of the Oregon State University is you can take things that might have a long-term payback. Suppose that you've got windows that might be a 25 or 30-year payback, and you got a new boiler that's a 5-year payback. You can conglomerate those all into one contract and do some roof repair along the way that is not exactly directly energy savings, but in order to put something on the roof, you've got to do some roof repair, you may find out. You can put that all into one contract and still have the cost savings because it's all wrapped up in this guarantee. Now, because we're going to guarantee and write a check out of our own pocket if we don't meet the guarantee, we have to be very cautious in our energy conservation estimates. As a result, about 80% of our clients actually get money back. In other words, we guarantee they're going to save 20%, they save 25 or 30%. So they will, from the very beginning, receive money back in their pockets. It's a great program, and as Mr. Shipwreck said, we're hiring union people to do this, highly skilled people, so there's a win-win-win-win when everybody comes out ahead on this program.
I'm Karan.
Steve, good morning. How do you do this? Does the state have one contract with one particular vendor that takes care of all the state buildings, or does each independent, whether it be Oregon State or Oregon Tech or a government building, do they go through an RFP process separately to pick the contractor who's to come in and do this.
Senator Devlin, Representative Garrard, thank you for asking that question, because that's one part of the bill that we haven't talked about yet. One part of the bill has the Department of Energy set up a pre-qualification list. There are about roughly a dozen companies like mine that do this kind of work. And what the Department of Energy would do is set up a pre-qualification list of these ESCOs, they're called Energy Saving Contract Organizations. And so that if an agency wanted to, they could go directly from that list and hire somebody off that list, or they could do their own RFP. That's up to them. They have their opportunity to use whatever selection process they want. But it would be really faster. You know, going through an RFP process can be a 6-month process. But if you go to that list and say, I'm at Oregon Institute of Technology and we want to fix our gymnasium up, we'd like to go to that list and just hire Johnson Controls or Chevron or Siemens or Honeywell or one of the other big companies, come in and have them go through the work. So the opportunity is there for either way.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bissonnette, please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, here today representing the Fair and Clean Energy Coalition, a statewide collaboration of consumer organizations, environmental groups, human service agencies, faith groups, clean energy businesses, and labor. We're here very strongly in support of 2876. We've been involved as a coalition in energy issues for the better part of a decade now, and looking particularly at energy efficiency. As has been noted here before, we've spent a lot of time this session looking at renewable energy, and that's kind of the sexy part of the energy business and energy efficiency when you're dealing with ducts and HVACs and that sort of thing tends to get short shrift, but is really the base part of making sure that that the energy that we do use is used efficiently, and that means that we don't need to spend as much investing in new generating resources and the like. So it really is a savings overall. One of the sort of clean energy business sectors of our coalition is the Northwest Energy Efficiency Council, which is the trade association of energy efficiency businesses in Oregon and throughout the Northwest, ranging from one-person energy consultancies all the way up to Johnson Controls and Siemens. And the industry wanted me to come down on behalf of the industry say this is a very good bill. The key to energy conservation is to make consistent investments over the long term. And this bill definitely helps out when there's a policy in place and people are really focused on thinking about this. I was also reminded in the back of the room that another aspect of this is the investments made in energy conservation, energy efficiency by the ratepayers of Pacific Core and Portland General Electric through our public purpose charge and administered by the Energy Trust of Oregon. Any resident, for that matter, or business or public entity within the service territories of those two utilities can, if they're looking at a big project, can look and see what sort of incentives are available through the Energy Trust to also help out on the cost of the conservation project. So we really have a lot of stuff that's kind of working together. And again, this is, I think, a policy focus to get people really concentrated on making sure that energy efficiency is job one. So we heartily endorse the bill and urge your favorable action. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Bissonnette? Thank you both very much. Mr. Graney.
Welcome back. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Record, I'm Mike Graney, Director of the Department of Energy. We also support House Bill 2876. My focus is on energy efficiency, and that's, as other witnesses have said, that is the most important and most cost-effective investment in energy we can make, even more important than renewable energy in terms of making sure the energy we use goes further. The state pays over $40 million a year on energy bills, and if we achieve the energy savings targets mandated by House Bill 2876, that would reduce the amount the state is paying on energy $6 to $8 million a year. So it's quite substantial. We think the approach that's outlined here is workable. The pre-qualification for energy performance contracting and other measures is very helpful. We've been working with the various energy service companies for about 3 years now, trying to get a process in place where the state can use this vehicle. And there have been legal issues involved, and this bill clearly gives us the authority to move ahead in that area, so that's very important. Finally, I'd just mention, in our budget discussions earlier this year, we had a decision package that would have used general fund to accelerate our work on state buildings. And instead, the committee directed us to use other funds, working directly with the state agencies to work on state buildings. And the approach here in House Bill 2876 is consistent with that direction from the committee. So we very strongly support this bill.
Any questions for Mr. Graney? Yes.
Excuse me. Mr. Graney, thank you, and I appreciate you coming here today. And as just for the committee members to know, this bill went through my committee, and we had strong support for it, and it was also on the House floor as well. Question I had about buildings that we lease, and I know that the state leases quite a few buildings as well. You know, for instance, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, the entire building is, we don't own it, it's a lease building. So do we have any, when we're negotiating contracts, is there anything that we can do on our leased buildings as well? Because I'm assuming that, are these costs that you quoted, the $40 million, only for the buildings that we own?
Madam Chairman, Representing Feller, that's total cost of all our buildings, roughly. And that does include leased buildings. And we're in a leased building as well, my agency. And many of the building owners are willing to work with the state. We've done a number of energy savings measures in our building that the building owners has actually financed and used state incentives, and we've given them technical assistance and direction on what to do. These tools, energy performance contracts and other tools in 2876 would be available to use with private landlords of state buildings as well. We would have to negotiate with them, but our experience has been very positive.
One question that I had, or a couple actually, is the bill doesn't differentiate between buildings that are relatively new and buildings that are very old. And I want to indicate that you want to actually move a date back too far, but I would hope that we could pick a date that was somewhere, I don't know what the range would be, like any building built after 1995 or any building built after 1998 should be pretty close to meeting standards, wouldn't you say? Or, I mean, the chances of getting a 20% saving would be pretty minimal out of, I would hope they would be, particularly buildings that we've built since 2000.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Our state building code was last updated in 2001 and 2002, I believe, in terms of major energy provisions in the commercial sector. We are beginning a process that would achieve another 15% of energy savings if the building code proposal that's pending now is adopted, but that would apply only to new buildings. So the older the buildings are, clearly the more substantial energy savings and the quicker the payback in terms of cost effectiveness, and that's where we would target our efforts first. And the OSU example that's been discussed is a prime example.
And I would think that, too, we had testimony in a different committee yesterday, actually from Representative Barnhart, who I guess grew up around the University of Oregon, And if the building there isn't, how would I say it? If the building there isn't 90 years old or 100 years old, it was probably built in the 1960s or 1970s, unless it's one of the most recent buildings. And that's not entirely typical of the OUS system, but it's pretty close. So, I mean, even though they have more than 50% of our space in terms of the vast majority of their buildings are quite old.
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chairman. And that tends to be true of the other institutions like corrections, like DHS's facilities as well.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mike, good morning. I'd like to follow up just a little bit on the same question I asked Mr. Kafouri. I'm a little bit intrigued how you will pre-qualify bidders, whether that process will be weighted in any way, in any direction, and what process you will actually use to create this list of people who are authorized.
Mr. Chairman, President Girard, it would be an open process, probably some type of rulemaking that will rely very heavily on the Attorney General's contracting, public contracting experts for. But our focus would be primarily on the quality, quality assurance and technical expertise of the companies, so that because there are so many, there's over 5,000 large state buildings and many thousands more smaller ones. So there is need for the state agencies involved to be able to act independently and act quickly when they want to move forward on energy projects, so that they have a list of pre-approved companies that they can use, and that they'll have confidence that the contract arrangements are fair to both sides, and that the state is getting value for its money.
Follow, Mr. Chair. Yes. And how big is this list going to be, Mike?
Mr. Kafouri mentioned, I think there's 10 to 15 sort of major companies involved in this field right now actively, but I think we would focus on the substantive criteria. So, you know, if there's 20 companies out there that meet the criteria, we would certify that many and leave the choice up to the state agency. There's not any maximum number in terms of, far as we're concerned. We're focusing on the quality of the work of the companies.
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Do you follow the definition of state agencies, or is that a finite group of things, or is that something that's...
I think there's a
statutory definition.
Senator Nelson, I think there's a definition attached within this. It may not be by definition.
It's a reference to statute.
Well, it's authorized state agency under Section 2, Sub 2. It's defined in the bill. We had no testimony in the policy committee on that.
Chairman, Senator Nelson, I believe that includes, that does include the state administrative agencies as well as the Oregon University system.
Anything additional? One thing I'd like to put on the record here, and I'm not trying to get myself in trouble, but the date on this, as you signed up today, was June 13th. If this committee is still open beyond June 20th, I will be very surprised. I'd be very surprised if we have any hearings passed next Thursday. Right now, the co-chairs have this for a hearing only. That's what I have today. So parties that want to see this bill go to a work session, I can only talk to the co-chair so many times each day. And in fact, they get tired of me listing the same bills for work sessions. So anything that you can do in that regard, I think, would be helpful. Now, this would be an assessment, and the assessment is not relatively large compared to what the potential savings are. I think it's slightly more than $400,000 in this coming biennium, and it's about $600,000 the following. As an assessment, I think it varies a little bit, but usually, Mr. Dyster can probably help me, a lot of times when we've seen assessments from DAS, the amount of that that's actually under the general funds is usually in about the 35-40% range? Or
I think it's going to depend upon which agency is doing the contracting with the Department of Energy. For example, if it's the PUC, the majority of their funds are other funds.
Right.
So,
but on average, we could probably say that maybe 150, 200, 1,000 of this was... It says other funds, but where its real origin is, and it's in general funds.
Where its real where its real origin is going to depend upon which agency contracts with Mr. Graney's department to do this work for them, and whether or not they have that in their budget is, you know, indeterminate at this point. Because it's my understanding that his portion of responsibilities would operate on a fee for service basis.
Right. That's correct. Okay. Any additional questions? Well, with that, I will close the hearing, and hopefully I will see you back sometime before next Thursday. Colleagues, tomorrow other subcommittees are scheduled for tomorrow afternoon, but as of right now, we are not. That might change, and I will try to let everybody know by noon tomorrow whether we have an afternoon meeting. We will have a meeting on Saturday.
Do you know the time?
I think it'll be generally, won't be exact same time as we have now, but your staff should have received an email that it would have been. It's not from me, it's from LFO. I think mornings will normally not be mornings, is what they're basically saying. Afternoons will generally be afternoons.
To the rescue. Thank you very much.
Nine on Saturday. You would have been scheduled at 1 to 2:30 tomorrow, but so far I have nothing for the agenda.
That very well could change, however.
Yes. And with that, we are going to...